first up today, Senator Sundrum, is Senator Wolf's Senate File 992. We have five bills up and five authors that want to go first today.
So. Wow.
So you're fortunate, Senator Wolf, to be first on the list. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if I need to move the bill or if anybody else moves the bill or... Yeah, I move the bill as since
Senator
I've
Perry?
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate File 992.
Senator Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and what members are here. This is simply a bill that will add a new subdivision to current statute that concerns school buses, and it would make it so that all buses that are manufactured from here on out in Minnesota starting in January 1st, that they would need to be equipped with the arm that is automated in the front that comes out in the front of the bus to stop children from passing directly in front of the bus. And I would like to turn it over to Mr. Kelleher to give you a little more detail.
Mr. Kelleher, welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record, please.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Tom Kelleher. I'm representing the Minnesota School Boards Association. This bill was in the omnibus education bill last year and was that bill, unfortunately, was – well, not the omnibus education. It was one of the bills that was vetoed. So a lot of the times when you talk to legislators about this particular bill, they go, isn't this already current law? There's been a couple of tragedies in Minnesota where school buses have had accidents with students. What this would do – and I should correct the senator – just that this is for all buses manufactured for use in Minnesota, not manufactured in Minnesota. That for all buses manufactured for use in Minnesota after January 1st, 2012, shall be equipped with a crossing arm mounted at the right front corner of the bus. And what this would do would – it's about a 7-foot arm that's attached to the front of the bus, and as the door is opened, the arm comes out. Recently, we had our winter convention in Mankato, and some of the bus manufacturers brought some brand-new buses down to the convention center for everybody to look at. These are $85,000 to $100,000 buses. They're really cool, but they're very expensive. These crossing arms are about a $350 option. And so we felt that it's a very proactive method to help with student safety, and that the cost is not very exorbitant at all, and it's something that, as the School Bus Operators Association, we support and would hope the legislature does too.
Mr. Chair.
Questions? Senator Perry?
Thank you. I already forgot your name. I'm sorry.
Tom Kelleher.
Mr. Kelleher, if it's at the right front of the bus, so it's going to swing and it's going to keep the children from going in front of the bus?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Kelleher, we're engaging in a bit of a conversation. I apologize.
It's all right. It was
Senator Perry, could you restate your question?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess what I'm getting at, first of all, how are these going to swing out? Will they swing from the side of the bus around and then into the front? And if so, how are you going to do that when snowbanks are 6 feet high? And that means you're going to have to be farther away. Or are they going to slide on a bar alongside the bus and slide out? And with that, haven't we been teaching our kids to walk in front of the bus if they have to go to the other side before the bus moves? I mean, I guess I'm just trying to clarify how this is all going to work.
Mr. Kelleher?
Mr. Chair, Senator Perry, these crossing arms are on about, I don't know, I shouldn't give you how many percentage, but they're on a lot of buses already in Minnesota. And what it is if this is the front of the bus, the crossing arm is flat on the flush of the bumper. And when the door is opened, the crossing arm comes out in front of the bus. The students, and Lieutenant Carroll's here, and he could probably say this better than I, the students come on the right side of the bus. I believe they're not allowed to cross the road to walk in front of the bus to turn and come into the door of the bus or come from the other side and come around the back of the bus. They're waiting at the bus stop over here. Oh, like over here at the front of the bus where the door is.
Right.
So they don't have an opportunity to be on this side of the bus or to walk in front. What this is to do is when they get off the bus to come out and go around the crossing arm and go in front. It's about a 7-foot extension. It's so that the bumpers on buses are very tall and a lot of the students are very short. And what this does is requires them to go out very far in front of the bumper so the driver can see them.
All right, Mr. Chair, that's what I was looking for, Mr. Kelleher, to see the reasoning behind it. And okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hall?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Kelleher, you know, I put my six-year-old on the bus today, and the bus had that arm.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, she actually does wait on the other side
because
of traffic. We don't allow her to cross the road without. So that arm comes out, and she does have to walk in front of the bars outside. But then the idea is that the bus driver can at all times see that individual rather than having her walk right directly in front of that tall. So they do also cross when the bus comes to stop because we don't allow her to cross the road until that bus is there with the stop arm out. But I don't know how many percentage of buses have it, but I don't know if all of them down in Red Wing do or not, but many of them do. I see most of them do have that arm.
Mr. Keller?
Mr. Chair, Senator Howe, some districts require school buses to have them. Some school bus operators voluntarily install them or purchase them on their buses. And I think the reason I said what I said, and I have a school bus stop in my front yard,
yeah.
And there's about 15 children out there every morning, and they're all at the bus stop in the morning. They're not, as you stated, waiting for the bus to show up. And as I said, if I need to be corrected, Lieutenant Carroll is here, and I'm sure he knows a lot more about this than I do.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to point out, where we live, there's not a crosswalk across the road, so she has to wait on the proper side until the bus comes and stops the traffic for her.
Senator Kreif, did you have a question?
No.
We will have to wait. We'll have to set this aside until we have a quorum. We need one more member before we can move to send it to the Senate floor and lay it over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. So it'll take a couple of minutes. We'll what's the motion? We'll just lay it over until we have another member.
Mr. Chair, I have a question then. I'm supposed to be at a conference committee. Should I stay around until there's enough to have a quorum so that I can move it, or what is proper protocol here?
If you want to wait for just a few minutes, we'll go ahead and get the next bill up, and I think within a couple of minutes somebody will show up here.
Okay, thank you.
We'll scold those that don't. Thank you,
thank
Senator
you, Mr.
Wolf.
Chair.
We'll get them here as quickly as
thank
we
you,
can.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. See Senator Ingebrigtsen yet?
Slowly.
Now we have a quorum, so why don't we bring Senator Wolf right back to the table? We'll move your bill. Senator Perry renews his motion that Senate File 992 be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor, and we will also lay it over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Wolf.
You're up, boss. Ingebrigtsen is there.
Who is the next most serious committee appointment? Senator Sandrum, why don't we take your bill next?
Mr. Chair, I could do lunch if.
Oh, you're sticking around here. Senator Perry, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Sandrum.
I bring before you a Senate File 341. And I do have an A1 amendment that we'd like to put on just to get the bill in order.
Okay. Senator Senja moves the A1 amendment. To the amendment, Senator Senja.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, I'm going to call on Alyssa Schilander of the Minnesota Auto Dealers Association to explain this amendment. It gets a little deep for me.
Ms. Schilander?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Alyssa Schilander. I'm with the Minnesota Auto Dealers Association. The A1 amendment is the result of several conversations that the Auto Dealers Association has had with the Department of Driver Vehicle Services and the State Patrol to get the bill in the shape that all parties are comfortable with. Basically deletes sections two and three from the bill and replaces section two with a simpler, easier to use version of regulation. So it's basically the Peace in the Valley amendment.
Senator Senja moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion, Senator Hall?
Mr. Chair, can you just explain for me where the 25-mile radius or the 25 miles came from? Is that, I'm just wondering, do we know, are there dealers that have affiliations that are 30 miles apart, or is this take care of 80%, or I'm just wondering if there's any outliers out here that we're looking at since we're going to put this in.
Ms. Schilander?
Mr. Chair, Senator Howe. For most what we call multi-dealership groups, that would be, you know, several dealerships owned by one company, we would be taking care of the vast majority of them with the 25-mile radius. And the 25-mile limitation is in current law, and it's basically my understanding that the State Patrol wanting to be able to have access to these records on a sort of a drop-in basis, they're not comfortable with having this regulation go beyond 25 miles.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Senator Rust?
I have a question. excuse me. What would, Mr. Chairman, Senator Senja or Ms. Schilander, how would you know if the department was being unreasonable? What's a test of that?
Ms. Schilander.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rust, I'm not sure we haven't defined unreasonable. I think that was a term that the department wanted some flexibility to be able to not allow this if they felt they had good reason. But, you know, we didn't want to set up such barriers that it was so difficult to allow dealers to do this. So I think somewhere in between, I think they, you know, Ms. McCormick is here, but I think we have had a good relationship with Driver and Vehicle Services so that they felt comfortable with this language.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's not.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Schilander, and Senator Senja, I can understand that the goal, but I think it's awkward to have kind of like three negative words right there in a row, shall not unreasonably withhold. I mean, rather than stating it in a positive manner, saying, you know, somehow indicating that it can withhold its consent, but only do so under reasonable conditions. I think it should be the burden of the department to illustrate that it's being reasonable in withholding the consent rather than the duty of the applicant to say they're being unreasonable. I mean, I'm on your side here. Mm-hmm. Clear that. I just think that's awkward, Mr. Chairman. Maybe you can think about that, Senator Senjim, if you can't rewrite that statement, that would be make the burden on the department, but still allow them some flexibility wherever your next stop is, and maybe even at the floor. Mr. Chairman, where's this bill going?
It's going to be laid over.
Oh, it's going to be laid over?
Yes.
Oh, so there'd be
opportunity
before the omnibus bill, policy bill, to maybe tinker with that language. Okay.
I think Ms. Berzovsky is tinkering as we speak.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. We'll work on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Right.
Thank you.
Is there somebody from MnDOT that would like to speak on the bill? Or Ms. I see Ms. McCormick is here.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services, and DVS does regulate motor vehicle dealers. And we met with the association and with representatives from the State Patrol that work with the Vehicle Crimes Unit so that we were sure that we would come to an agreement that would allow us in certain circumstances to be able to withhold permission if we felt it was important for us to not allow a dealership to have the record centralized in such a way that it might prevent the State Patrol, or we also have examined vehicle inspectors that work for us that go out and oversee dealer records to make sure they're in proper form and meeting statutory and regulatory requirements. And so we support the bill and believe that we have addressed the issues that we need to and that it supports public safety.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. McCormick. Any additional questions? Senator Senjum moves that Senate File 341 be recommended to pass, or actually we will lay this bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus. Certainly. Dual track. But prior to that, we need to adopt the A1 amendment. Any discussion on the A1 amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Now that we have the bill in its proper form, do we have some language that we could possibly amend it to clarify as Senator Rest wanted? Ms. Berezovsky?
Mr. Chair and Senators, this language would substitute for the language on 1.9 and 1.10 that begins the department shall not. And the suggestion is the department shall consent to the application unless it provides a reasonable basis for denial.
Well, does that sound like it'll meet?
Mr. Chair and members, it sounds fine to me. I think Ms. McCormick would probably need a minute to discuss this with her staff. But from our perspective, that sounds fine.
Mr.
But if
Chairman,
it's not, we still have time to,
yeah,
to
Mr. Chairman,
address this.
What I think that language does is that accompanying a denial would need to be they'd have to give an explanation.
Right.
And I think that is that's that's not unreasonable.
Ms. McCormick?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I think the language seems fine from my perspective, but I would like to go back and talk to our staff that work in vehicle services and our dealers unit just to make sure, but it seems like it's appropriate and it gives us what we need. But just in case they see something that would be problematic, I can't imagine what it is, but I do like to defer to them because they're the ones working on a daily basis with these issues.
That sounds reasonable, Ms. McCormick. And Senator Senjum.
Mr. Chair, can we just start with this language, and we'll certainly fix it up if it needs to, either at the floor level or certainly in your omnibus bill.
Okay.
It gets that far.
That's fine. That sounds good.
But I do think that it's fine, Mr. Chairman, but I do think that language is better.
So Senator Senjum renews his motion that Senate File 341 be recommended to pass and move to the Senate floor, and
amended.
We will also, as amended.
It's being laid over.
The author has requested that it also be dual-tracked to the Senate floor.
Oh, well, then, Mr. Chairman, I would then offer that amendment if that's going to be the case. I thought you were laying it over, and so there'd be time to work on it.
Very good. Senator Rest moves the oral amendment to the amendment. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. Now, Senator Senjum renews his motion that Senate File 341 be recommended to pass and move to the Senate floor, and we will also lay it as amended. Thank you, Senator Rest. We will also lay it over for possible inclusion in the Transportation Omnibus Policy Bill. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for allowing me to get in front of Perry, Senator Perry.
Mr. Chair.
There would be...
Senator Perry.
I would suggest in the future that, you know, if Senator Ingebrigtsen comes late, I should be able to go before him with my bill.
Point well taken, Senator Perry. You'll remember that, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
I will.
Yes, Senator Ingebrigtsen, on your bill.
Members, I have with me... an enforcement officer from the DNR. I'm going to have him explain the bill. It basically talks about displaying vehicle plates for conservation officers. I think it's pretty straightforward. It includes about three or four lines in the bill here. Fiscal note, it is zero. That should be appealing to everyone. And with that, I think I'll just turn it over to the representative from the DNR, and he can explain it, and we should... we'll stand for questions.
Welcome to the committee, if you'd identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Alex Gutierrez, Minnesota Conservation Officers Association. The bill we're looking for, or what we'd like, is to be included with the statute of 168.012. With the Department of Corrections in the back of unmarked vehicles, line item 210. We currently have marked patrol vehicles, and we used to have regular plates. We're now going to specialty plates because of an excise tax. And by putting us in this category, we would no longer be required to pay that excise tax to get regular plates is what we're looking for. We're not looking for new plates or anything like that. This would certainly allow our job to be a little more effective in the sense of patrols, things like that, checking fishermen, sitting out on the lake, deer season, things like that, just coming down the road instead of having a special enforcement plate or being parked on the side of the road with your big badge on the side of the truck. It would certainly allow us to do our job more effectively. There's no fiscal note attached to it. Department of Public Safety has no issues with the bill either. On the consolidated fiscal note, says that this fiscal has no fiscal effect on their agency. Questions?
Senator Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in essence, what you're saying is you want to be more unmarked.
Correct.
Is it correct?
Okay. Correct. The department will still have, Mr. Chair, Senator Perry. The department will still have a policy where we will mark our vehicles for high visibility situations, whether it's a, you know, invasive species work detail or flood response, things of that nature.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to that point, Senator Perry and members, in the field of, and I'm sure that we're not going to tell you anything you don't already know, but we certainly want the not only the DNR but the State Patrol as well as other law enforcement in the state to be able to have marked vehicles out there. If nothing else, it's a deterrent of crime. If you're out in a neighborhood, it certainly makes you feel better when you see a squad car come back that's all marked up with lights and you know, the standard functionable squad car. Really no different for the DNR. However, there are times when we do have to go undercover, so to speak, or be somewhat covert, and this is exactly what it's all about, and it's certainly going to enhance their ability to be able to
catch that person out there that's looking for that marked car and still in violation. So,
Mr. Chair. Senator Rest.
So, Mr. Chairman, so Senator Engelbreth, this means that they'll be able to sneak up on people up easier. Is that's that what you're saying?
Senator Engelbreth.
Mr. Chair and Senator, yes, the sneak up part is what it's about, yes.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Perry?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I used to love to drive the unmarked squad car just because you see things that you normally don't see when you're in a marked vehicle. Mm-hmm. And I think there is a big need for it. So I just wanted to set the tone that I'm not against it. I just wanted to understand it if that was what it was. So,
Mr. Chair?
Senator DeCraft?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question. Would this vehicle still have a tax-exempt plate on it? So it would have a license plate that would designate it as a state vehicle?
Mr. Chair, Senator DeCraft, it would not. It would have regular, the blue and white regular 10,000 Lakes plate, okay, which is what the biggest thing that we're looking for.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Rust.
Are you planning to send this bill along separately?
Mr. Chair, Senator, how many vehicles are there, and of those, how many of the vehicles are considered unmarked?
Thank you,
Senator Ingebrigtsen. Yeah.
Mr. Chair and Senator Lee, for that question. I was just going to offer that, actually, and I was going to have the officer here give us an idea just how many, without giving up the total operation here, how many at any one given time that would be utilizing such a plate. I'm not aware of that, but I would assume it's going to be not a real significant number, but I'll let him answer that.
Mr. Gutierrez.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lilly, we currently have 201 field stations, including management, which we currently all have marked patrol vehicles. There are, I believe, four or five special investigations unit vehicles. I don't think anybody knows what those vehicles are or what they look like, but they are certainly unmarked.
Not many.
Again, Senator Ingebrigtsen, what we will do is lay this bill over for possible inclusion in our omnibus transportation policy bill. So thank you for your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
We'll lay it over.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Senator Perry. Senator Perry, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. I'm here before you with Senate file number 330, and it's the Deputy John W. Liebenstein Memorial Highway Bill. And I brought a couple of testifiers with, because I want you, them to, first of all, retired Rice County Sheriff Richard Cook. I'd like to have him talk a little bit about why this bill is before this committee and what its intentions are. So if I could,
very good.
Retire
Welcome
Sheriff.
To the committee. State Thank your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Senator Perry. Mr. Chair, my name is Richard Cook. I'm retired sheriff for Rice County this past January. 15 years ago, John Liebenstein was killed. Actually, he was murdered while he was trying to prevent a stolen vehicle from entering Rice County or the rural area of Rice County. That was May 3rd, 1996. That vehicle is being pursued down I-35 by a Scott County deputy and exited on County Road 1 on the off-ramp. Deputy Liebenstein had positioned his patrol car at the top of that off-ramp in an attempt to stop the suspect's vehicle being pursued. However, the suspect's vehicle accelerated and struck his squad car traveling at an estimated 90 miles per hour in an intentional and vicious act. As a result, Deputy Liebenstein suffered fatal injuries and died at the age of 40, leaving behind his widow Jean and three young children at that time. And this had a profound effect on the law enforcement community, not only in Rice County, but also statewide. His family, obviously, and the community as a whole in Rice County. I know at that time we talked about doing a highway memorial. We did meet some resistance from the Department of Transportation, but we've watched some other models that have evolved here in the last few years and want to model a highway memorial for Deputy Liebenstein in the manner that was done for Sean Severa and Lionel Lakes most recently. I'm going to defer to Steve Lowry, who's a law enforcement student graduate from Minnesota State in Mankato. He was also the recipient of the John Liebenstein Memorial Scholarship in 2009, and he's been working hard on this to give back to the family and the community in the memory of John Liebenstein. I'll let him talk about what we've talked about and how we arrived at that.
Very good. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Like what Mr. Cook had noted, we want a highway memorial that's very, very similar to the Sean Severa Memorial Highway, which is on the north portion of the metro area on Interstate 35 in the Forest Lake area. And his memorial is 60 inches tall and 48 inches wide. And our goal for our memorial highway is to have three signs total posted on Interstate 35 in the Rice County area. We want one northbound lane of Interstate 35 on the south border of Rice County. Second, we want a southbound lane of Interstate 35 on the northern border of Rice County, and a sign in around the site of where John Liebenstein died in 1996. So we would prefer to have these signs in brown, which is fashioned after the Rice County Sheriff's Office. And we want to keep these signs very basic and simple by briefly saying a Deputy John W. Liebenstein. So again, these signs will be very, very similar to the Sean Severa Memorial Highway. And if you look in your packet, there are three other memorials that are in the packet. One is Timothy Bow Memorial Highway. The second is Theodore Foss. And the third is Sean Severa. So the Sean Severa Memorial is very, very visible to passing motorists, and simple. It's very simple and basic.
Very good. Is there somebody from MnDOT that would like to testify on this? Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sue Groth, and I am the state traffic engineer. And I'd like to just talk a little bit about some of the issues that MnDOT has with placing memorial signs on highways. The federal rules for signing strongly discourage memorial highway signs, and especially on interstates. FHWA has full oversight of all of our interstates, and therefore we try to keep the interstates kind of especially clean as we can and not place any non-essential signing on the roads. The feds do recommend that any memorial signing, like if we would like to memorialize the highway, that we use the rest area as a place if there's one nearby, and in this case there are a couple rest areas that are close to the location of where this officer gave his life. And that would be what we would like to suggest instead. If you look at the handout that the gentleman passed out of, the Timothy or Ted Foss Memorial. What's nice about placing the memorial signs in the high or in a rest area is one, it gives motorists a chance to be able to pull over, stop, and reflect. And we can actually do a little bit more with the sign as far as making it a little more attractive and being able to even tell a little story, for example, the plaque that's underneath that sign there. So it gives us a little flexibility to add some additional information, hopefully that would educate people about what the situation was. So that's what we would recommend. When Sean Silvera signs were passed, MnDOT did oppose them pretty strongly, and it's hard to, you know, I just want you to know it's hard to get up here and say we oppose signs on that memorialize officers, obviously, because we work very closely with law enforcement officers and we understand the importance of their work and what they sacrifice every day. But we do have rules that we have to follow from the feds, and I think that this is a nice option to put the sign in a rest area. And we did have a chance to meet ahead of time, and that was kind of what we had talked about perhaps putting forward. So, any?
Well, Ms. Groth and Senator Perry, we plan to lay this bill over for possible inclusion also in our omnibus bill, so you'll have some time to work with MnDOT and possibly find a solution or a better alternative, if you will, or whatever the case might be. But, so there will be some time to continue to work on this. So.
Right. Mr. Chair, I would like to also offer the fact that this is the same bill that went through the House and passed through the House. I talked to Representative Fritz, who sponsored this bill in the House. I would just, and I understand that, and thank you for the opportunity to be here, but I think what we, and we've had this discussion in this committee before on different signage and how we're going to look at that. But I believe we need to, though I look at the Timothy, or the Ted Foss Memorial, that is a great signage for what I would consider in rest homes. But I think in this case, when we have established already signage of this, I think it would be hard not to continue to be very cautious and work at maintaining the same signage requirements that it appears we've already set up with the Officer Silva sign that we've okayed and put out there. So I'm not opposed to working with MnDOT on this to hopefully come to a good solution on how we continue with not only this sign but other signs coming forward in the future.
Certainly. And Senator Perry, we have had that discussion here on bridges and other locations, and typically we try to play by the rules here and abide by the law, which I think is a prerogative of ours and something that we need to do. So any effort that you could place in working with MnDOT to find a suitable location or a suitable way, we'd very much appreciate, because this officer, I believe I can speak on the part of the committee, deserves to be recognized and memorialized in this way. But we need to find the right way to do it. So appreciate your efforts on that, Senator Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee.
And I said earlier, we will lay this bill over for possible inclusion. Oh, we do have an amendment before we do that. Do you have some language for an oral amendment, Ms. Berzovsky?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The oral amendment would be on line 1.13, delete everything after signs. Delete lines 1.14 to 1.22. And insert, at one or more rest areas along signed Interstate Highway 35, after consulting with the local community and sponsors.
That's a good idea. I guess that is a possible amendment to your bill. What do you think, Senator Perry? We will leave it to your discretion to move the amendment, if that be your...
Well, I think, Mr. Chair, at this point in time, I would not be open to that, as I would like to have time to sit down with MnDOT and discuss the request that we have here before I'd want to offer any kind of amendment.
I thought you were going to say that, Senator Perry. So, once again, we will lay your bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus policy bill.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Senator Perry.
Okay.
Next, we'll take up Senate File 1072. Two-year bill, Senator Gimsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Senate File 1072 is really a clarification on the behalf of the railroad workers and the property owners there. There have been some issues with law enforcement demanding or requiring railroad workers on railroad property to produce and to give them a Minnesota driver's license under certain circumstances, and the requirements on railroad property are different under federal law than our roads and our bridges and other areas, and the railroad workers fall under federal law. And here to explain in better detail is David Brown. Sorry about that. David Brown, to fill us in a little bit more as to the circumstances that they have run across with this issue.
Senator Gimsey, would you like to move the A1 amendment first?
Certainly. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I move the A1 amendment to Senate File 1072.
Senator Gimsey moves the A1 amendment. Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? A1 is adopted. Senator Gimsey. Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Chairman Gimsey, and Mr. Chairman and Steve, members of the committee. My name is Dave Brown, and I am a member of the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen. That is a division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters Rail Conference. I'm here today representing the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers Legislative Board as the elected state chairman. We represent all the locomotive engineers in this great state. I would like to add that the coalition of rail unions, including the Brotherhood of Maintenance Away, Employee Division, and also members of the Teamsters Rail Conference, and the UTU, are fully in agreement requesting your support of this bill. There have been incidents of railroad workers from Minnesota and surrounding states operating on railroad tracks that are on private property being involved in crossing incidents. That when requested by law enforcement to produce their driver's license, that information was placed in the state's database via an accident report. They were consequently subject to the railroad workers' personal auto insurance carrier screening of their motor vehicle records. The insurance screening resulted in higher auto insurance premiums and scrutiny from the individual's auto insurance. Only after extensive protests was the injustice vindicated and hopefully removed from the DMV and the insurance records. Rail carriers operating into and within the borders of the state of Minnesota are require all railroad employees to maintain and have in their possession a company photo identification card. Engineers are required by federal law to maintain and have in their possession a federally issued locomotive engineer certification license. Minnesota has multiple water and land ports serviced by the rail industry. As a result of moving America's freight into and out of these ports, many railroad employees are required to possess a transportation worker identification credential. Those are administered through the Transportation Security Administration and the U.S. Coast Guard. Railroad employees are held to the high standards of federal transportation acts and laws, and the stringent requirements of rules and policy of the rail carriers that the citizens of Minnesota and this nation demand. Railroad workers have and carry a rail carrier required photo proof of identification, federal licensing certification, and credentials that clearly states the identity of a railroad worker in the event of a rail crossing incident without the need of a Minnesota driver's license. The BLET trusts that the clarification of traffic citations to the railroad worker would resolve any conflicts associated with state and federal laws, eliminating any questions or gray areas that confront law enforcement with the identification of a rail worker. I encourage this committee's support of this bill that addresses this crucial issue that impacts railroad workers and their families. Mr. Chairman and esteemed members of this committee, on behalf of the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen and the Teamsters Rail Conference, I thank you for giving me this opportunity to consider my comments. I am pleased to address any questions, concerns, or clarification requests at this time.
Members, any questions for Mr. Brown? Senator Gimsey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, like Mr. Brown said, sometimes through no fault of their own, during an incident at an intersection, a railroad worker can have a black mark on their record and have their insurance company pick that up. And so what we would like to do is allow them to use their railroad identification. And like Mr. Brown said, they have numerous and they have procedures for dealing with after incident investigation and procedures that to handle all of that. So I would appreciate your support on this and would recommend it pass. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Gimsey, is it your wish to hold this over?
Yes, we could hold it over.
Is there anyone else that would like to testify either in support or opposition of Senate File 1072? Any questions? We'll hold over 1072 for possible inclusion in the Transportation Omnibus Policy Bill. And seeing no other business to come before this body, the Transportation Committee will stand in adjournment.